Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Thursday, April 7th, 2016. It is 5:05 p.m. With me at the table, Co-Chairman Kelly.
Hello.
Senator Hoffman.
Good evening, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy. Senator Bishop.
Good evening, Madam Chair.
And myself, Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. Is there anything to come before the committee? The first item before the committee is SB 91. We heard an overview of the bill this morning. Is there any concerns or do you have any questions on version Y? Seeing and hearing none, the fiscal notes have been updated. You have a revised packet of fiscal notes. The only thing that hasn't been revised is the grand, the Excel spreadsheet that accumulates all of the fiscal notes together. Is there any questions on the fiscal notes? We are in receipt of a letter of support from 19 member agencies of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, a statewide coalition that promotes and sustains a collective movement to end violence and oppression through social change, as well as another letter of support for the DVSA prevention programs at $2.5 million. New letters for you to consider. Any questions on the fiscal notes? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, I move
the committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 91 Finance, version 29-LS0541, /Y, from committee with the attached fiscal notes and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 91 Finance, /Y, moves from committee. Brief at ease while we sign the paperwork.
That's
little bit lighter, I apologize for before. Welcome to Senate Finance. The next items on our agenda is SB 207, Teacher Retirement Employer Contributions, SB 208, Eliminate Alaska Performance Scholarship, and SB 210, Community Revenue Sharing Property Tax Exemptions. We do have a CS that's been adopted for some of those bills. We have invited testimony this evening, and I'm going to, with the committee's support, take it a bit out of order. Mr. Norm Wooten, the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, needs to catch a plane tonight. So if I could ask Norm Wooten to join us at the microphone. Mr. Wooten, thank you for joining us here this evening. And if you would tell us which bills you're specifically speaking to, hopefully we can contain those comments to around 15 minutes.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Norm Wooten. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, and I certainly appreciate your indulgence with my schedule, and I will be very brief this evening. Our member school districts will be testifying on the expected impacts of Senate Bill 207, specifically on their schools and their students. What I would like to do tonight is to address the overall impacts of this legislation on Alaska's K-12 education system. First, let me say that the education community has been firmly in favor of the Alaska legislature adopting a long-range fiscal plan to address the major revenue problems of state government. But never did we imagine that any bill would get serious consideration if it proposed, like SB 207, to transfer more than $2 billion from K-12 school operations to the teacher's retirement system. And not until today were we asked for our input on how this would affect operation of Alaska's 500 public schools. The actuarial report from Buck Consultants, dated April 3rd, calculates that if SB 207 were enacted, it would mean a diversion of $2.1 billion over the next 23 years from school districts to the teacher's retirement system. Where will this money come from? School districts have no taxing authority, and local governments do not own oil wells. So the $2.1 billion will necessarily have to come from local taxpayers and our children's classrooms. In my opinion, that's neither wise nor fair. SB 207 is unwise because it borrows from our future, the education of the next generations of Alaskans. And it's unfair because the unfunded liability of TRS was created by actions at the state and national level and not at local school district level. Passage of SB 207 could have many unintended consequences, among them the layoff of teachers and the removal of other caring adults from the lives of our children. Many school districts already have difficulty in recruiting teachers. The average salary of teachers statewide dropped 1.9% this year, according to our surveys, probably because of retired teachers being replaced by new teachers. School boards have been wrestling with tight budgets for most of a decade, but passage of SB 207 will make that deficit a permanent fixture for K-12 education for the next two decades. I urge you, respectfully urge you, to put this bill aside. Ms. Kramer has written copies of my testimony that will be available to committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Wooten, for joining us today. Senate secretaries are passing out your comments. They will be available and posted online as well. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for staying in Juneau today. Safe travels home.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Now I'd like to invite David Teal, the Director of the Finance Division. Might take a few minutes, Mr. Teal, for that to warm up. I can see what you're doing, but I'm not sure everyone else can. So the purpose of today's conversation is to understand how the state and the local communities are working towards paying off and meeting the obligations of our retirement system. Mr. Teal, I can't tell if it's up there yet.
It is. It is, Madam Chair. For the record, David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance. And you asked me here today to explain what the bill does in a very brief manner, I think. It's, you can see that the bill raises the rate cap on the TERS employers. The current rate is 12.56. The state pays everything above 12.56, which is a substantial amount of money. This bill would increase the rate cap by 6.44% the first year, and then 1% increases for the next 3 years. So the new rates would be 19% and then climbing by 1 point until it reaches 22, where it stabilizes. As those rates go up, it of course reduces state assistance, because as I mentioned, the state pays everything above this rate cap. So the baseline projections from Buck, the state's actuaries, were that we would be paying $110 million and declining, and then beginning to climb again. Under SB 207, the state assistance would fall to 63 and then to 31 and be fairly stable after that. So the change in state assistance would be $46.6 million in the first year and increasing as payroll increases. The impact on schools, of course, is that if the state pays less state assistance, the TERS, the schools absorb that same amount, $46.6 million, increasing again with payroll and with these rate changes. In order to help schools absorb the TERS costs, there is additional funding, formula funding, to the schools, and you'll see that in the first fiscal note that you have. I don't know if you've got it in your packet or you can find it, but that there's a fiscal note there for showing a constant $33.7 million increase to it isn't foundation formula, it's simply an addition to schools that will be paid out in exactly the same way as the formula, and that $33.7 million, as explained in the intent in the bill, would be for 5 years, and you can see that that ends in FY21. So the net impact is that schools must absorb 46, they're being given 33, so they wind up with a net absorbing TERS costs of 12.9, and that would increase again as the rate increases. So the new funding level is shown on line 13. And not coincidentally, that change is exactly equal to, or as close as we can make it, to a $50 reduction in the BSA. I say not coincidentally because that is the amount of the third and final $50 annual BSA increase that was included in HB 278. So this just unwinds that, and in 17, compared to what it would have been, it's about a 1.1% increase. But it puts you at the same level of funding that you were at in 16. So again, line 16 here is showing that funding in 17 is the same as for 16, 0% change, $0 change. In 18, as rates go up by another point, school districts would have to absorb the TERS increase of approximately $9 million. It goes up by another percent, so it moves to 18. It moves, and then the final year of the 1% bump, you go to 27. After that, it's just payroll. And then in 22, the $33 million temporary five-year increase is scheduled to go away, and that would then increase the amount that schools would absorb to $65 million. So over the five-year period through 21, it would be a reduction, effective reduction in school district funding of 2.5% over the 5 years. And then if this is not replaced or extended, that would be a 5.7% reduction from 16. The graphs are probably not particularly important. They just show that what this bill does is shift funding from retirement assistance to education funding. That's not simply a political thing, although it certainly is probably politically attractive to many legislators and others to say that we're spending money on education rather than on retirement assistance. But the real issue here is that by handing money, by retirement assistance does not allow local effort to be increased. If we move retirement assistance, put it under education funding, that $33 million increase in basic need would increase allowable local contributions by 23%, which is $7.8 million annually, so that if a community was willing and able, they could now contribute more voluntary local contributions to the district. The fiscal notes, it's probably not necessary to really look at them. There are a number of fiscal notes there for the university, CESA, which is the Special Education Services Agency, and Southeast CERC, the Vocational Technical Institute, and to DED, Department of Education. These are TERS employers other than school districts. The fiscal notes for them offset their costs, just as we've tried to do here with the $33 million going to school districts. So neither the costs absorbed by those agencies nor the appropriations to them that are shown in the fiscal notes are included in the numbers above here. And just a side note here is that the formula increases and TERS rate increases are not necessarily allocated identically, and there's a tendency for large urban districts with a higher percentage of payroll than smaller districts to get less money back from the TERS allocation than they get through the BSA. So there's a slight redistribution of money here as well. It's not, I mean, total, these numbers will tell you what's happening, but at the individual school district level, there are some, I don't know, I hate to call them winners and losers, but there's a small redistribution of that money. And that's really all I have, unless there are questions.
Mr. Teel, the only question I have is if you could explain to Alaskans how much the state is picking up that were local districts' costs. So we capped it, and in a time where we had the ability to help, we capped the TERS rate at 12.56. What are the cash calls on the state for the districts that are their expenses, not the state's, that we don't have control on?
Madam Chair, the 12.56% is roughly the normal cost of retirement, the TERS retirement system. And normal costs simply refer to the cost of actually paying a pension, assuming that all the actuarial assumptions, including life expectancy and earnings and everything, come out exactly as projected. But they don't come out as projected, and in fact, in 2005 and again in 2008 and 2009, the retirement systems both lost substantial amounts of money in investments. Actuarial assumptions were changed, and as Mr. Wooten testified, it's not the school district's fault. It's also not the state's fault. If it were the state's fault or school district's, you wouldn't have the situation we're in, which is virtually every retirement system in the country is in trouble. So there's no blame here. But what happens is we set, the legislature set the rate at 12.56 because the alternative would have been to increase the BSA back in 2008 so that school districts had the money through the formula to pay the increased costs of as retirement costs went up. At the time, the legislature was looking at Buck's projections, which showed that that state assistance was going up to maybe $150 million or so, and then would decline. And by about this time, we would be out of the business of state assistance. And then, of course, the recession of 2008 and 2009 happened, and you see where we are with past service costs, and we now see 25 years of high costs where it's no longer an issue of do we put the money in the BSA and let the school districts make the full payments, or do we pay those same costs as retirement assistance. We thought it was going, the state assistance would be short term. It isn't. And this bill simply shifts the employer cost, some might say, to where it belongs. But I guess you could say to the employers, because each employer is responsible for making its retirement contributions, past service as well as normal cost.
Senator Kelly.
David, thank you, Madam Chair. David, the roughly $80 million per year that was increased in 2008 into the BSA, that's not reflected in here, is it?
Through the Chair, Senator Kelly, no, and I'm not sure that everyone's aware what you're talking about there, but...
Well, in 2008, we raised the BSA to accommodate some of the expenses to the local districts, and it was $80 million, and that just went into the base, so roughly that's about $720 million that doesn't even show up on here, including the, well, the $2 billion that we put into the unfunded mandate, or unfunded liability. So those numbers aren't showing up on here, and they're significant numbers.
Mr. Teal, if I could get a brief answer, what was the actuary number on the TERS system as far as a percentage, just so Alaskans can understand the tug that we're having right now? So we have let the school districts be capped at 12.56, and some of the problems as we go through scrubbing these numbers is that we watch school districts continue to expand their programs and hire new folks that create some liability, some on the health side versus the new folks in the retirement system itself. But what is the percentage call to the state in 16 and then in 17 above the 12.56%? Do you know that number?
Madam Chair, the number for 16 was $122 million for just school districts. There's another $3 or $4 million for the non-school districts, but close enough, $125 million.
I'm not being clear. The actuaries give us a rate that we have to pay. Is it 22%? Is it 31%? We've capped the school districts at 12.56, and the state has been picking up the delta between what the actuaries are actually calling for. And if you don't know it...
No, if you're referring strictly to the rate, the TERS rate was over 50% for a while until the large $2 billion deposit was made. the rates then dropped to about 30%, and the with the April projections, the rate is now, I think, under 30 slightly. So the rates have dropped substantially, but again, as you call it, the delta between the 12.56 and the whatever, the 22.56, the state is paying a far larger share of TERS costs than the school districts are. And that amount is here, $100 million in 16, and then you see the rate decline in the April actuarial projections. This would have been continuing to increase to over $160 million by the time you got out to 23. That were the prior projections.
And that was we were able to drive that down because of the $2 billion cash infusion to the plan.
Madam Chair, that's correct. In part, they say that $2 billion was a big difference. Healthcare costs have also declined. There are some other minor things, but certainly the $2 billion was a major driver.
And then the good news, if there is any, to start this conversation with local communities, is that by asking for bills and presenting them, we went through a process where we actually had a second actuary analysis on this year's proposal. Is that true?
That's correct.
And the effect of that was that we found out the health care costs had went down and that there was a reduction in cash call to the system. Is that accurate?
It is, Madam Chair. The reduction in cash call for FY18, for instance, in TERS was about $25 million, and for PERS it was about $65 million. So substantial.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? We certainly can have Mr. Teal back again. I know we have other members of the public waiting. I would just ask Alaskans to be thoughtful. We're facing a $4 billion deficit. We are trying to be strategic in our approach at looking at state responsibilities, and we absolutely understand that the Constitution of the State of Alaska requires us to provide for education. But what is out of our control is what local districts are doing with personnel. And as the state invests huge sums of money into the retirement systems, local communities have chosen to stay on that annual payment plan. And so we're just in a tough spot, and we need your help. We need a thoughtful conversation, and we need to understand how these bills will affect your way of life, how you're doing business in each of those communities. With that, thank you, Mr. Teal, for the explanation on the state support above the 12.56% and what the local communities are contributing. With that, I'd like to invite Lisa Parody. Lisa is online. She's the Executive Director of Alaska's Council of School Administrators. Lisa, are you there?
Madam Chair, I am here. Can you hear me?
We can, but I'll ask if we can turn your we're turning your volume up on our side. Please proceed with testimony, and if you're speaking to a particular bill, I would guess it would be SB 207, the teacher retirement. But please give us your comments on the bill before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon, for the record. My name is Dr. Lisa Skiles-Parody, Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. I am speaking on Senate Bill 207. Briefly, ACSA's mission is to create a common voice advocating for public education by shaping policy and growing leadership capacity across the state. It was designed and established in 1973 to serve as the umbrella for four of Alaska's premier educational leadership organizations, the Alaska Superintendents Association, the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, in the Alaska Association of School Business Officials, and I'd like to let you know that Amy Lynn is also in the audience there and is available to assist with answering any specific statewide data impact questions. I'm sorry I'm not there in person. One of the core functions of ACSA is the Alaska Staff Development Network, basically the largest provider of quality professional development in Alaska for educators, and we're currently hosting the first opportunity for stakeholder feedback on the ESSA Alaska State Plan in Anchorage, and it's exciting. We too have stakeholders from across Alaska participating. So let me get to the bill, 207. With the bill title, an act relating to increasing employer contributions to the defined benefit plan in the teacher's retirement system, which clearly and unequivocally states its intent to cost shift from the state to school districts the cost burden of the retirement system, as David Teal just verified. I'm turning next to the fiscal note. It's before you. It states that all other things equal, the effect of SB 207 is to decrease the TER state assistance contribution required under AS 13-25-085 and increase the TER contribution required of employers. These dollar amounts are outlined in your fiscal note. So thus, as seen in this fiscal note, SB 207 anticipates a massive cost shift from the state to local districts and other educational entities of over $416 million, which is receiving its first invited testimony this afternoon on the 80th day of a 90-day session. And I'm going to turn to the act in depth and just offer a couple of points. Because of the last-minute introduction, the bill has yet to receive any public testimony or sufficient scrutiny of its consequences, both intended and unintended. Please do not substitute my testimony for that of individual school districts, as the consequences of this legislation would impact each district in a unique way, including some districts which likely would not survive. Given its magnitude, it hasn't received sufficient study of its specific finance ramifications for districts, and thus more properly belongs in an interim study, as is done by this body with a series of education studies laid out in House Bill 278. It should be noted that the teacher retirement system, TERS, is a state-created system. Districts can't be blamed, as Mr. Teal shared, for the cost of it. The state did the actuarial studies, the state set the rates, the state established the generous benefits that it now seeks to cost of to the districts. Underfunding issues that have plagued the system are purely state-created. Moving the increased burden of the underfunding problem to districts will be damaging to classrooms. Moving the cost of a pension obligation to a different part of government is not a reduction in the cost of government. It is simply a cost shift. The cost of government does not go down. It just changes the subdivision of government that is paying for it. So this cost shift to districts that are used to government hold no authority to raise revenue. So they'll be turning to the municipalities to do so. And further, in the case of REAA, the taxing authority is the legislature. They have nowhere to turn. REAA's absorbed over $6 million in FY17, plus an additional $133,000 per year in each of the next 3 years. Given other statutorily imposed restrictions on districts, such as the reduction in force or the risk trigger restrictions, this cost shift leaves districts in a worse position than straightforward reduction in basic need, where districts could, under the limited statutes adopted by the legislature, potentially trigger risk. I am not proposing a reduction in basic need, but just noting the statutory complications from this approach. Given the time of year, and especially in light of the late in-session drop of this bill, districts have contractually committed for personnel for next year. Personnel are the biggest percentage of any district budget, as people generally and teachers specifically are the heartbeat of our service to students. Any attempt to cost shift should, at a minimum, have a delayed effective date to the next fiscal year to give districts some opportunity to plan budgets. The suggested short-term funding from the scholarship fund is insufficient because it is not in the bill and therefore can't be counted on, and further is inherently short-term. And while we truly appreciate this effort to accommodate our concerns for the immediate impact, it doesn't get us to a stable conclusion. And I will submit written testimony, and attached to it will be a spreadsheet with projected TERS and PERS statewide impacts to all districts resulting from both of the proposed Bill 207 than 2.09 as originally proposed. The data has been verified by the school business officials across Alaska working through Alaska and demonstrate that cost-shifting approach at $400 million. In conclusion, if SB 207 does move forward, every school district in Alaska will face a steeper uphill budget process for each of the next 5 years, working to balance the budget while facing increasing costs without any ability to increase revenue. In sum, 5 years from now, approximately 10% reduction in education at the same time, overall costs continue to increase. Costs like health insurance, many of you heard that many of our districts were impacted by a 25% increase recently. Fuel, utilities, transportation. Simply stated, this is a cost shift, and at its core, it is a shift of state responsibility onto districts. We urge you to reconsider this bill and, at a minimum, instead shift this into an interim study. So, as Madam Chair has said, we can have thoughtful discussion. We can spend time to truly look at this and to be fully understood on both sides. And I will add that, our figures and calculations and the calculations by us don't take into account the fact that it's very likely that employers will have to reduce staff to deal with these increased costs. And I think near the bottom of page 2 of the Buck Report, it acknowledges that if employers cut staff, then this could have the effect of partially reversing the impact of the proposal. So that means the state will not have saved as much as projected. In essence, someone has to pay these costs for past liabilities, and it's going to come back to the state. Thus, the district and the students of Alaska will suffer due to reduced staff, and the state ends up having to pay the bill anyway. I urge you to reconsider the bill and to work with us to have a dialogue and a thoughtful approach with local school boards, with local school districts, with school finance experts, and with your experts. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Parody. Senator Kelly.
Thank you, Lisa, for testimony. I like the organization that you represent, and I think you do a very good job. So my comments are at the education community in general, not necessarily you, but some of the things you said sparked my comments here. I would encourage the school districts, the education community, the unions, to just oppose this bill. Please stop saying that we should work with you, because we don't get anything back. Anytime we propose any reduction, last year we proposed, I think it was a less than a 1% decrease to the increase. They came unglued, absolutely unglued, as if the world were coming to an end because of a tiny decrease to the increase. They said we need time, and we need a way to feather any changes in. We've given them that. And now we're getting the same thing. No decrease or even a halt to the increase has ever been acceptable to the education community. And so I guess my other point is, I understand you don't want to pay something that is clearly was a school district responsibility, and the state has taken it over, because they were pretty significant. I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars that the state has taken over in both presenters to ameliorate the impacts on districts. The fact is, I don't think the education community wants to work with us. That doesn't mean we should pass the bill. It doesn't mean we should pass the bill. I'm done with this insincere dialogue of people saying they want to work with us, when the education community clearly doesn't. We have never gotten anything from them. We've never gotten any solutions. We've never gotten any innovations. We don't get even a consideration when it comes to a decrease, even to the increase. So again, Lisa, that wasn't directed at you. That's just kind of directed at the education community. I'm not sure what to do. We've got a $4.1 billion deficit. We're looking at taxing people. We're looking at changing the dividend. And one of the places where we spend our most from which many Alaskans say we're not getting the product back that we want, we get no help. So,
thank you, Senator Kelly. If I could invite Diane Behrens, the Executive Director of Alaska's Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Department of Education and Early Development, to the table. Ms. Behrens, if you would identify yourself for the record, and then please comment. My guess is on the SB 208, the elimination of Alaska's performance scholarship.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and I am here to speak on SB 208 to eliminate the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Education Grant Programs. Let me first say that I appreciate being among those invited to appear before you today and offer comment. Let me start by acknowledging those of you who played a key part in establishing the programs this legislation would now eliminate. I understand your sponsorship of this proposal in no way reflects that you do not value student financial assistance, but rather it is one component of a planned response to the state's financial straits. Alaska's lawmakers as budget appropriators are faced with the unenviable task of deciding the health and future of our state for the near term and the long term. Senate Bill 208 seeks to address short-term needs by proposing an immediate phase-out and repeal of the Alaska Performance Scholarship and Alaska Education Grant, the only state-funded financial aid programs for residents attending post-secondary education and training programs here in Alaska. As I understand, the stated objective of the bill is to enable the repurposing of monies in the Higher Education Investment Fund for other state obligations. As legitimate as that objective is, investments in Alaska students through scholarships and grants, similar to investments in oil and gas pipelines, are clearly in Alaska's long-term interest. In the face of the state's current financial challenges, a decision in favor of continuing investments requires a strong conviction that, in order for our state and citizens to prosper, it is essential to cultivate a highly trained and educated resident workforce. You may recall that it is due to your shared belief 6 years ago that the legislature acted in a fully bipartisan fashion to invest an inordinate amount of time and energy debating the appropriate design and operation of the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Your goal was to ensure Alaska students, families, schools, and the entire statewide community could do better in areas where Alaska's performance has historically lagged well behind those of the rest of the states. Your unanimous action expressed in no uncertain terms that you recognize the critical importance of retaining our young talent and sending a message to every student that if they worked hard and made the right academic choices, that could pay off for them. The APS data demonstrate that you were spot on. The program data reflect outcomes from the first 4.5 years operation. That includes of the almost 40,000 high school graduates of the classes of 2011 through 2015, almost 12,300 met APS eligibility requirements, as did almost 250 private or homeschool graduates. Through December of last year, approximately 5,250 students have received performance scholarship awards. I did share with the committee a one-page infographic that highlights academic performance outcomes for performance scholarship recipients compared to non-recipient peers. I suggest that collectively these outcomes serve as a proof of concept that Alaska scholarship works. We found substantially higher post-secondary attendance rates in Alaska, as well as increasing in-state attendance among the highest performing students, those who have traditionally been booed away by other states. Much stronger academic performance in terms of reduced need for remediation, resulting in very significant savings for the students and the state. Much faster rates of progression towards a degree, much higher persistence rates. And these performance statistics grow even stronger over time. For example, the initial lower remediation rates declined by an additional 7% between the initial class and the current incoming students, reflecting the gains associated with the full academic requirements having been phased in. The term brain drain generally refers to an outmigration of our young people to other states. However, brain drain must be recognized as a product of two very distinct and economically damaging historical patterns in Alaska. Certainly one is the outmigration of talented in-demand students. Annually, this is about 16% of our high school graduates. These are graduates who have the wherewithal to attend post-secondary education institutions elsewhere and who then, in significant numbers, remain where they have established new roots. Yet a substantially larger group is comprised of graduates who remain in Alaska. Those graduates who, for a variety of reasons, fail to pursue and or complete post-secondary education make up in excess of 60% of our high school graduating class each year. As a result of this pattern, the majority of these Alaskans are not prepared to fill the high-skill, high-wage employment opportunities needed to fuel a robust Alaska economy. Unless we continue our efforts to disrupt this pattern, Alaska's business sectors, such as resource management and extraction, healthcare, education, and finance, will continue to pay hefty premiums to search for, import, and retain workers in high-skill trades or professions. The primary reason they're forced to import talent to the extent that they must is because Alaska has done a poor job of developing and retaining the talent of Alaskans born and raised here. And while they're spending significant resources in these efforts, underprepared Alaskans are left competing for low-skilled, low-wage jobs which generally lack upward career mobility. You took action to change the equation, and from what we can tell to date, you did. In your final design and funding of the state scholarship and grant programs, you made inroads towards addressing both out-migration and under-preparation at the root cause level. You are incenting academic preparation and financially supporting post-secondary participation. As I noted earlier, after only 4.5 years, your work has begun to demonstrate the transformative impact of such sound public policy. The sharp contrast between APS recipients and non-recipients relative to attendance, remediation, and persistence are early objective outcomes that document success. And they are just the tip of the iceberg relative to the longer-term benefits that will result from these programs. Within the next 2 years, your original student cohort will have had 6 full years access to the scholarship and will be engaged as part of the workforce. I'm very confident the long-term program benefits will be amplified and illuminated as future APS reports reflect Alaska employment rates for APS graduates and Alaska Education Grant recipients compared both to their high school classmates who attended elsewhere and to high school graduates who did not successfully pursue post-secondary education and training. So while I certainly recognize the fiscal pressures that have led you today to consider SB 208, I want to also ensure you are aware of the fallout of doing so and you're able to make a fully informed decision. Students in Alaska, if SB 208 passes, students in Alaska are likely facing substantial increases in the costs of pursuing post-secondary education and training. At current year average cost of attendance at our public university, after receiving an APS, recipients must still find other ways and resources to cover 78% to 87% of those costs of full-time attendance. The UA Scholars Program has been pointed to as an alternative. However, it covers only 14% of current year costs, and as of 2013-14, the last year UA reported on it, only 31% of APS recipients also received a UA Scholars Award. While Pell Grants are available on a financial needs basis, because many APS recipients are from middle-income families, less than 1 in 5 of them qualify for federal needs-based grants. And for students who do qualify for federal aid, the current maximum Pell Grant covers a little more than 1/4 of the current average annual cost of full-time attendance. As I prepared these remarks, I did so confident that these are issues about which you are all familiar and have shared interest and concern. If you were not strong proponents of education and training, you simply would not have supported these programs through very substantial appropriations over the past 5 years. So in concluding my testimony, my proposition to you would be, if SB 208 is to advance, that the legislature consider extending the phase-out window during which graduating high school seniors can earn eligibility through the class of 2018. That two-year extension would give students and families advance notice of your intent to terminate. It would also allow the legislature to base your final decision on a full analysis of the program's impacts. You could then examine whether the return on your investments in these Alaskans is worth institutionalizing for the long term. This additional time would also inform your ultimate decision, should you conclude defunding is unavoidable, whether to fully repeal the programs or simply shutter them, but leave program authorization in place with confidence that the state of Alaska will in the future have the financial capacity and collective will to once again support human resource development through these types of efforts. Thank you again, Madam Chair, for the opportunity, and I'm certainly available to respond to questions.
Mr. Behrens, Ms. Behrens, thank you so much for those comments. The next person that has been invited to testify, Sachi Oba? Saichi, if you could come to the mic, identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair McKinnon. I'm actually in Fairbanks, and I'll be testifying through the phone.
I see that. Off-net. Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you very much. Good evening to both you and Chair Kelly, members of the Senate Finance Committee. Thank you for your service, and thank you for the opportunity to testify this evening. For the record, my name is Saichi Oba. I'm the Associate Vice President for Student and Enrollment Strategy at the University of Alaska System Office. The University of Alaska strongly supports the continuation of the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Education Grant. Early in the discussions that led to the APS, the university believed that the scholarship would prove decisive in at least two ways. One, it would incentivize better post-secondary preparedness, and two, it would help the university retain Alaskan students. It has done this and more. The Alaska Performance Scholarship has encouraged high school students in the state to take rigorous coursework, resulting in the need for less remediation at the University of Alaska. APS recipients take fewer remedial courses than non-recipients. Only one in five APS recipients took any remedial courses, but over one half of non-recipients required remediation. Studies indicate that financial aid and high school academic experience are factors that increase the persistence for university students. The APS helps with both of these factors. APS recipients stay in school. By fall 2015, the 2011 APS recipients were nearly twice as likely to continue their attendance, 36% versus non-recipients at 24%. Related to persistence is the fact that APS students at UA on average earn more credits in 4 years than non-APS students. Losing the APS sets back post-secondary attendance not just at UA, but in the state at large. APS eligible graduates are Alaska's brightest students. They are more likely to pursue post-secondary education and more likely to do so in Alaska. The opposite is true for ineligible graduates. The rates of attending anywhere are much lower and have declined over the same period. To this, I would add, the greatest competition UA faces is not from other colleges or universities, but rather from Alaskans choosing not to go on to any post-secondary program. The loss of APS and AEG will only exacerbate this tendency and the associated impacts on the quality of Alaska's skilled workforce. Let me now turn to the Alaska Education Grant. Alaska is lowest in the nation, ranked 51st for the last decade in the proportion of low-income high school graduates who go to college, either in Alaska or outside of Alaska. The AEG was one of the only tools helping the state claw its way out of that position. The Alaska Education Grant is the only state-provided post-secondary financial aid grant available to low-income Alaskan students. If ended, Alaska would be one of few states in the nation not providing its low-income residents tuition assistance. AEG is generationally changing the path of low-income Alaska residents. While post-secondary enrollment is abysmal for low-income Alaskans, it's not much better overall. Consider the path of 100 Alaskan ninth graders over the next 10 years. 29 will not graduate from high school. 40 will not go to college. 15 will go to college, but do so outside. 15 will go to the University of Alaska. And of those, only 5 will graduate with a BS or higher within 6 years. The Alaska Performance Scholarship may have been designed to incentivize academic performance in secondary schools, but it was actually shaping Alaska's future by setting in motion a cascade of positive events that go something like this. Better prepared graduates graduate from Alaska high schools. This leads them to attend and succeed in post-secondary programs in the state, which then leads them to work in the state, which in turn helps the state meet its future workforce and economic challenges. This is the Alaska that APS is shaping. This is the future we should commit to. Let me close by suggesting that if the APS is to be eliminated, you consider postponing initiating phase out until the graduating class of 2018. From what we know, students in that class and the preceding class were aware of the state's commitment through APS and made their own commitment when they entered high school to take the courses needed to earn the APS. They should be rewarded for their commitment. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you for joining Senate Finance. Questions from committee members? Seeing none, the next invited testimony is Kathy Wasserman, the Executive Director of Alaska Municipal League. If I could, right now I have three folks holding online for SB 91. We have moved that bill from committee, so if you're following for SB 91, that bill left committee shortly after 5 o'clock. Ms. Wasserman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, Kathy Wasserman, Alaska Municipal League. I won't take 15 minutes. I have some brief statements. But first of all, I have dropped you some notes in the last couple of years telling you that I respected your respectful manner with which you run Senate Finance. And I have to apologize especially to you because I did not do the same the other night when a reporter called me. It was late. I was tired. And as soon as that word came out of my mouth, I realized that. Anyway, I apologize to you for that.
We've all been there.
Pardon me?
We've all been there.
Well, okay. Thank you, Senator Kelly. I regret saying that, but I talked to them for 20 minutes, and that's what they picked up. So, first of all, I will take a few minutes on SB 207. The Alaska Municipal League has discussed this at length and feels that this bill is not part of an appropriate solution to solve our fiscal crisis. And it certainly does not seem to be any part of a discernible plan. Taxpayers under SB 207 will shoulder the cost of this increase in school costs, as the school districts have no taxing authority. The taxing authority falls on the municipalities. A few members of the legislature have reiterated their belief in not taxing Alaskans, and we feel that this perhaps is a way to have the municipalities tax instead for these extra costs. And I don't know if that accomplishes anything other than just changes who indeed will tax the Alaskans. This also does not shrink the footprint of government. It simply hands a bill that the state has to the municipalities and the school districts. We're puzzled how REAAs will cover these costs. They do not have anyone to tax for them, especially since the legislature is their assembly and does not wish to impose taxes. So their whole increased cost will fall on their classroom, or they will have to take everything in cuts. This, we believe, is not a municipal or a school district obligation. This is a state obligation. The state is the only entity with fiduciary responsibility. Municipalities and school districts have had no say whatsoever in how the system operates. We have simply paid the bills that the state has required us to pay. We do not provide retirement benefits to anyone. We do not have contact with the actuarials. They are directed by you, the legislature, and have been for some time. This unfunded liability was not simply caused by a stock market crash. The major cause was state mismanagement exacerbated by a market crash. Municipalities and school districts have paid the required 22% and 12.56 rate as required since the 2008 commitment and agreement was made. During the period of 2005 through 2008, the state, along with other members of PERS, worked together with the legislature to find a solution to the problem of underfunding of this plan. This process uncovered the fact that the state's accounting system for the plan was broken beyond repair. Member employer accounts were not accurate. The agreed-upon solution was the cost-sharing plan that we have now. And in recognition of the fact that the state had control of the actuarial analysis, the accounting and the handling of investments, an agreement was arrived at that the employer rate would be 22% and 12.56. This rate was below the actuarially required rate at that time. This was not simply a gift bestowed on municipalities and school districts. It was recognition of the situation all of the plan members were in at the time and the state's fair share of the problem. This agreement was intended to provide, at the time, affordability and predictability for all parties. With regards to HB 385, in 2014, that bill passed the House, much as then Governor Parnell and the municipalities had supported. At the last minute, the bill was changed, it was voted on, passed, and it tacked on an additional 9 years of payments to municipalities, totaling at this point $2.5 billion in extra costs. Total cost to school districts and thus to taxpayers over the next 4 years will be huge. These extra costs will continue to escalate as school districts will be required to pay this 22% rate for an additional 20 years or more. If we are indeed all in this together, we are puzzled as to why we have not all been at the table to work on these issues together. Municipalities and school districts have not been invited to help with solutions. We simply have had word passed down to us as to what is going to happen. As far as Senate Bill 210, the Alaska Municipal League does not take a strong position on this bill. The current bill pits municipalities against municipalities, haves and have-nots. We are concerned with large communities taking such heavy hits as they are taking on much of the fiscal crisis cost shifting, 207 among them. For instance, the increases proposed in SB 207 will affect these larger communities to the tune of approximately $200 million over the next 4 years as taxing authorities. We have supported since the beginning of the year the governor's position of depositing an additional $35 million into the revenue sharing fund, bringing the total to $50 million, which is already a $10 million decrease from the original formula. We are willing to realize a $10 million decrease along with the loss of capital projects to build aging infrastructure, the loss of much of our community jail money, the loss of ferry service, the loss of much of our road construction and maintenance money, potential public safety cuts, the loss of much of our airport maintenance, the addition of $2.5 billion in expenses due to HB 385, the loss of school bond debt reimbursement, and the loss of food inspection funds. We have accepted those changes. SB 210 has no effective date. It does not appear that this bill can be signed and effective until after the date for FY 2017 revenue sharing payments are due. Thus, municipalities would likely receive money under the $38 million plan which is currently in effect. If SB 210 passes, for instance, the Mat-Su Borough will go from a payment of $2 million in FY 17 to a total of $895,000 in FY 18. At the same time, the community of Bettles with 11 people will go from $61,000 to $96,000. To fully fund the revenue sharing community assistance, the legislature will also have to deposit approximately $4.5 million into the fund to bring that fund to $30 million. The base amount alone under SB 210 cannot be covered with the money that is currently in the fund. If this formula goes into effect and a deposit is not made, all of the larger communities will basically go down and to amounts that are close to the base amount, which goes from $96,000 to $484,000 per year. If the status quo remains in place, shared revenue will be based on $25.3 million for FY18 to be shared between 164 municipalities and approximately 50 unorganized communities. Revenue sharing, if not funded, will then cease to exist. And we see nothing in SB 210 that states whether that same scenario will not take place if this legislation passes or if the legislature decides not to appropriate. The Alaska Municipal League would ask for a revision of these amounts through cooperation with the legislature, AML, Department of Community and Economic Development, and Department of Education. Remember, we are all in this together. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Do you think the local communities benefited from a $3 billion injection of cash into the plans?
As far as an outlay of cash, Madam Chairman, I can't say they did. They ended up getting nine more years of 22%.
Did their payments go down?
Their payments stayed the same, 22%. We extended the mortgage.
Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, on the other side, the tourist side, I just think it's important that the record reflect that the statement was made. I think that since the 2008 deal was made, that the districts have covered their cost of TERS. That 12.56% was put into the BSA. It's handed to them in the BSA, and we've paid $720 million. They didn't. We did. That 12.56 number is almost a phantom number. It's a state payment that we make every year. It goes to them, and then it's covered somehow, but they don't pay it. It's in the BSA. And then there's all that amount over and above that we pay as well. We pay the whole bill on that.
Ms. Wasserman, I appreciate you expressing frustration and concern on the bills that are before us. Again, they're ideas that are trying to address the fiscal problem, and I promise to work with you and others that are concerned about each of the issues. Alaska is short $4.1 billion. We can't give things that we don't have, and the governor is proposing to reduce dividends and form taxes. And those taxes that he's performing will not cover the cost of education or many of the things that are included in his operating budget this year. And so we have some tough decisions to take on as community members. And I'm not going to go and try to challenge your perspective on the obligations that the state has. I think it's fair. It's a fair assertion that education constitutionally is a state obligation, responsibility, and I think it's fair that we work on the problem together. But under the clause of local determination, school districts and cities have added personnel and may or may not be contributing in positive ways to the health of the plan, to the health of the population that works in those communities. And we are trying to reach out at this late date and see if there are any ideas that local communities have that we can do to soften the blow to a $4.1 billion problem. So there is not an effort to cost shift. There's not an effort to take any pride of ownership in cost-cutting measures that somehow transfer. This conversation has to do with an obligation that the cities and the local communities have allowed the state to participate in when we could and carry those costs. And we don't know how, as a group, that we're going to carry them into the future. So it's nice to want more revenue sharing, but that means we will tax Alaskans for that revenue sharing. There's no place else to go for the money. And so I hope that you'll pass your written testimony out so that we can include it in the documents. And if you have ideas for any ways to reduce the budget in areas where local communities should take on those responsibilities, if you could identify those, I would be most grateful. But we need help from all Alaska, and many Alaskans are participating and sending in great comments about how they believe government should change. And so we are trying to go through an analysis of what is a local responsibility and what is a state responsibility. And I very much appreciate you coming out today and sharing the perspective of small communities that haven't had an opportunity yet to share it in a microphone. So we are receiving many emails, as you might imagine.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I was here when we reinstituted the revenue sharing program, and that was as a result of the state of Alaska receiving billions of dollars, and we had put away billions of dollars. The problem, you know, and that's why it was called the revenue sharing. The program under this legislation, Senate Bill 210, changes that program to assistance program. We do not have the revenues to continue to share. And this body can't guarantee what other legislators are going to do and whether this program will be funded in the future. But I believe that reducing the program by 50% and making the changes that are in Senate Bill 210 are things that this legislature, or at least this Senate, is presenting, and hopefully we can help try to save the program. There are no guarantees that this program will go forward, but I believe that it, given the fact that we don't have the revenues, I think the state of Alaska changing the name to an assistance program, trying to assist those communities as much as possible, given the dire straits of the state of Alaska's financial position.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. And Ms. Wasserman, you said it well. We're in it together, and we are not in any way, shape, or form trying to hurt anyone. Every step that we take, we know impacts individuals, local communities, and there isn't any pleasure in bringing these ideas forward. But bills are ideas that belong to the public, and we appreciate the public commenting on them. And to steal a line from the governor, this is in pencil. We've proposed a suite of ideas that work together, and if the public isn't in favor or is in heavy opposition to a particular proposal, we're listening. But everything is on the table, and that's just how it is right now, and we are trying to walk through the understanding impacts of all of the different ideas that are coming to the Senate Finance Committee from a variety of areas. But again, sorry you're the last person. I don't mean to put you on the spot. We appreciate your representation of smaller communities and making sure their voice is heard. Senator Dunleavy?
No, I'm good.
Okay. With that, is there anything else to come before the Senate Finance Committee this evening? With ease while I look at tomorrow's agenda. We're back on the record. Tomorrow, Friday, April 8th, 2016, we are under the 24-hour rule, so I just try to do it a day in advance so that folks know what's coming. We will try not to surprise anybody by pulling bills from somewhere else without making sure that we've put it on our website up and ready to roll. At 9 a.m. tomorrow, we have SB 205 and HB 373. It's the approval of a sale of royalty oil to Tesoro, so we'll hear and hold that bill. And then Friday at 1 o'clock, we have SB 138, the capital budget, and 5 p.m., if necessary, we have bills previously heard. Anything else? With that, we're adjourned.